and Dennis Sullivan versus the City of Fort Worth. If our clerk will announce counsel, we will proceed.
May it please the court, Mr. Jeff White to argue for appellant and Mr. Paul Budlow to argue for appellee.
Mr. White?
May it please the court, your honors, opposing counsel. As the clerk has said, I'm Jeff White. With me today is Tom King. We're here representing Martha and Dennis Sullivan, asking the court today to reverse the granting of the plea of the jurisdiction grant by the trial court to the City of Fort Worth and send this case back to the trial court for trial on the merits. As I've watched the other cases, I've been pleased by your preparation. You obviously spent some time reading the briefs and looking at the law. And you know our brief had many points to it. There's only really about 2 points I want to bring to the court today. We were faced in the trial court with kind of a shotgun plea of the jurisdiction. We filed a response. We had a general granting of that motion. And the court, despite timely request, did not file findings of fact and conclusions of law. So we're kind of holding a broad base of argument. But in reality, there's two points I want to bring to the court. One is well-settled Texas law, though at times I believe not well understood. And the other asks the court, if you're going to uphold the plea of the jurisdiction, take a statute, a place that's never been taken before. Let me, if I could, address the fact that this case arose when Ms. Martha Sullivan broke her ankle. And it was a severe break. It's no dispute about the fact she hurt herself. The accident occurred about 3.5 years ago when Martha and Dennis Sullivan were attending their granddaughter's wedding at the pavilion in the Japanese Gardens, in the Botanical Gardens here in Fort Worth. It's also owned by the City of Fort Worth. The Sullivans have claimed that the accident occurred. Their injuries came from the fact the city was negligent. There have been complaints about the placement and the wattage of lights in the Japanese Gardens. They had arrived during the daylight hours for a wedding, as anticipated by the agreement between their grandson-in-law and the city. But when they left, it was dark. That was also anticipated by the agreement. And as they went down the stairs, it was very dark. In fact, she was being escorted by her son, one of her sons, on her arm. And he stopped and said, "Mom, let me get out my cell phone, and I'll try to get this little light so we can see." And as she stopped and put her foot down, there was nothing underneath it. And she went down probably a 2-foot drop, and it was not a pleasant injury by any means. She still suffers today. There's been claimed the city was negligent by the placement of the lights, the wattage of the lights, having handrail in some places and not in others, by putting foliage up that would shadow the pathway, by not trimming the foliage properly, by failing to maintain the paths. And so there have been a number of claims of negligence. The first issue is whether those negligent acts of the city are discretionary acts, policy formulation protected by Texas law from suit, or whether they're negligent implementation and open to suit for claims of negligence. Now, I think one of the problems the bar has, and sometimes the court, is that we make broad statements of law. If we don't need to discuss those statements, we don't always follow through. And this area of the law has a lot of broad statements. But there are some cases, which I'm assuming the court's familiar with, having looked at the materials, that really give us some light in how this law ought to be interpreted. If I could just drop out one Texas Supreme Court case and a couple of cases out of this court, I think it shed some light on the issue. The first case would be Stephen F. Austin University versus Flynn, 2007 Texas Supreme Court. Ms. Flynn's riding her bicycle on a hike and bike path that's partially, at least where she falls, on the university property. Next to it is athletic fields. And there's a sprinkler system, and there's a sprinkler coming up, and it's an oscillating sprinkler. As she rides her bike, the water hits her, knocks her off. She claims negligence. The university has good lawyers, and they say, "Look, this is a public work. It's our design. It's discretionary. We're protected." And the Texas Supreme Court set out the standard. Let me just, if I might, read from that case for a moment. It says, "When the government in the exercise of its discretion decides to act, however, a distinction is drawn between the negligent formulation of policy, for which sovereign immunity is reserved, and the negligent implementation of policy, for which immunity is waived." It goes on and says that's a matter of law for the court to decide. Its conclusion, because the issue was the placement of the sprinkler, where the head was, where the water shot, the volume of the water, the court says this: "The Court of Appeals correctly concluded that the decisions here concerning when and where the water was to spray were operational or maintenance-level decisions rather than policy formulation. Thus, the acts that allegedly caused Flynn's injury fall outside the scope of the discretionary powers exemption." And they held the placement of the sprinklers, the amount of water that flowed, that was operational level, and it was open to liability. The interesting thing is the court decided a case out of this court, Bennett versus County, Tarrant County Water District Number 1, for its argument. And that's a 1995 case out of this court involving Eagle Mountain Lake, some flooding involving around the lake, but it's kind of a long opinion, but the part that deals with what the Supreme Court referred to says this: we hold the decision whether to release or pre-release water from the Eagle Mountain Lake spillway constitutes policy formulation for which the water district is immune from liability. And listen to the second sentence. Once the decision to release water is made, however, the subordinate decision of determining the volume of the outflow constitutes policy implementation. It's great language, and it really lays out well the distinction. This court said in 1995 that basically there's two levels of decision. There's an upper-level decision that's policy, and that's protected from suit. But then there's what this court called a subordinate decision, a lower level. How do we do that? It's not protected. If you go back to the Flynn case and apply that same logic, it makes perfect sense. The upper-level policy decision. We're going to do an irrigation system. A how-to, the subordinate decision. Where do we put the sprinkler heads? How much water flows? Where do they spray? That's a great description of what the distinction is between what's policy formulation and what's policy implementation. Another case is the Forbes versus City of Denton case, also out of this court, 1980 case. Mr. Forbes is arrested, thrown in jail. He has matches in his pockets, apparently. He sets his mattress on fire. The fumes cause his death. The family sues, claiming, among other things, you shouldn't have a mattress that puts off toxic fumes when burned. City of Denton says, it's discretionary. Again, the argument we've heard from the city in this case. You can't sue us. This court held that the decision to get the mattress was policy formulation. It was protected. But they said, basically, again, there's a subordinate decision about what type of mattress to buy, which to buy, and that is actionable negligence and can be sued upon. Your Honor, in this case, the City of Fort Worth made a decision to build a garden, the Japanese Gardens. That's a policy-level decision. It cannot be sued. Had they chose not to do it, you could not sue on that. But once they did that, their subordinate decision, a number of them, about how to do this. One is the placement of lights. They placed them in trees. They decide how much wattage to put. They didn't put them on the pathway where people had to walk. Instead, they put them in trees, and there's a question as to how bright they were. One of our clients said it looked like Christmas lights. One of their affidavits said they balanced ambience and safety. They tried to. They put foliage up. They put trees and bushes up that would shade the pathway. They didn't always trim the trees. That was an issue at one point from their own witnesses. They decided to put handrails in some places and not the others. The accident occurred where our client said it was. There were handrails coming down, but where she was, the handrails had stopped, according to the director of gardens. Handrails are very important. Not only are something to hold on to, but when you're in a dark spot, they give you clues and cues as to where the edge of the pavement is. They made a decision to put them one place but not another. Those were operational level decisions. They can be sued upon as negligence. Yes, ma'am. 5 or 6 o'clock. Yes, Your Honor. 5 or 6 o'clock they normally close. Under the agreement between the grandson-in-law of my clients, the Sullivans, and the city, he could stay there till I believe it was 10 o'clock that night. And so the city knew that there would be people there after dark. So my clients, who were not familiar with the property, showed up during the daylight hours. And when it's time to go home, it's quite dark, which brings really a kind of another issue up. But they were open because they leased it to our client's grandson-in-law, Your Honor. The city at this point, they advertise the Japanese Gardens as being available for weddings, and they do it after dark sometimes. And they have some duties to make sure if it's after dark to make sure that there's lights. Their clients actually testified there is lights. There have been a lot of testimony from our clients, from co-defendants, and from the one neutral party that there was darkness. It was extremely dark. It's kind of one of those flukes of a lawsuit sometimes. One of the wedding guests is an engineer who specializes in lighting. And he says it was so dark, he basically says it's gross negligence in his affidavit. He says basically they knew people had fallen, and they still tripped and fell, following the same steps that our client had fallen upon. One of the issues that we've alleged is negligent maintenance. There's never a question that maintenance is a policy implementation. It's always can be sued upon. We alleged it. We put evidence for one thing that they said it was light and normally light, and that night it was dark. There's some issues. There's some issues about trimming foliage.
Okay, I've got a question again.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, Your Honor.
I need something more basic.
Okay.
How are you saying negligent maintenance without trying to get under the Tort Claims Act?
We're under the Tort Claims Act,
okay,
Your Honor.
How are you under the Tort Claims Act on a negligence maintenance claim?
It's premises liability.
Okay, so let's go to that. How is negligent maintenance premises liability?
Premises liability is that there is a defect in the premises, and it can happen a number of ways. One is if it's not kept up.
Okay. So go through the elements of a premises liability case, and here's one of the things that I'm having trouble with. If they're not open during the evening hours, how can they have actual awareness of this lighting? I mean, it's...
Your Honor, there's evidence that they are open for events like weddings. They have a number of weddings throughout the year. Their own one of their witnesses testified that this is common. They do open for special events.
Okay, so do we have prior reports of falls at this location? Do we have evidence of prior notice and years before there's been 20 falls at this particular? I mean, what is there of a premises liability? Because if you're not under the Tort Claims Act, then if you can't get under the Tort Claims Act, mm-hmm. then I'm not sure you can get out from under the granting of the plea to the jurisdiction.
Oh, Your Honor, the Tort Claims Act provides very clearly premises liability. Premises liability is a defective condition that they knew or should have known about.
Right.
And in this situation, it has common. There are a number of cases. I haven't bothered digging them all up, but a number of cases that deal with adequate lighting in premises liability case. One of probably the best known is the case back in the 70s that did away with open obvious, Parker, I think, versus Highland Park Apartments. That was, you know, literally that was coming down a dark stairway. And so there's very little doubt, there's cases out there that adequate lighting is necessary for a premise to be safe. In this case, the premise was open. They had leased it out. They had done that numerous times. They knew there would be people after dark. They have people on the premises who know that it's dark. There are evidence of falls on the premises. There have been testimony by the police officer that he'd seen and knew of many people that had fallen. And so the premises liability is that we're there as an invitee. And as an invitee, they owe us some duties to keep the place safe. They know about the lights. They know it's going to be after dark. Is there an element that you would like me to address further, Your Honor?
No, I'm understanding your position better now. Thank you.
Okay. The negligent, I see I'm about out of time. Let me quickly address.
You have 2 minutes.
Let me address the recreational use statute. Because there's a vast difference of opinion between the city and our clients as to whether the recreational use statute applies to a marriage ceremony. There is no rule of interpretation. There's no Texas Supreme Court case. There's no cases that would support that argument. City offers two basic arguments that says a wedding ceremony could be a recreation. One is that it happened in a park. And that particular argument has been rejected by Texas Supreme Court in Belmese versus Torres. Ms. Torres was injured in a park in the city of Belmead. The issue was whether or not swinging was going to be recreation. And the city argued the exact same argument the city's argued in this case. It's a park. We designed it that way. It's meant to be a park. And the Supreme Court said no. The legislature gave us this laundry list of activities. If it was the intent of the landlord that mattered, we wouldn't have a laundry list. They rejected that. The other argument that the city seems to argue is that it was outdoor and it was enjoyable. In the Belmy versus Torres, the court considered that language and still went back to looking at what the nature of the activity is. That actual catch-all provision says that any activity associated with that joy in the outdoor, and the court went back to the nature of what recreation is. All through the case law, the courts go and talk about, is this activity recreation? You find nothing that would support a wedding ceremony being recreation. It's an extension of the law further than legislature, we believe, intended, further than the rules of interpretation, which have set out by statute and by common law, would take it, further than the Supreme Court, I believe, has ever taken the law. We contend right now that a marriage ceremony is not recreation. I will quit. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Paul Boulos. I'm here on behalf of the city of Fort Worth, and with me is Louis Fierros with the city attorney's office. We are here to ask the court to sustain the trial court's granting of the plea to the jurisdiction. This case is up on appeal as an interlocutory appeal from the trial court. As counsel said, there are really two grounds that the trial court had for its consideration of the plea to the jurisdiction of the court. One of them had to do with the Tort Claims Act and governmental immunity. The other one has to do is if the court finds that governmental immunity was waived under the Tort Claims Act, then there's a consideration of the application of the recreational use statute. And I'll address these separately. First, with regards to the governmental immunity, we have pled and our plea to the jurisdiction that the plaintiffs, Ms. Sullivan's original petition and first amended original petition, does not allege a cause of action which waives the governmental immunity or calls the application of the Texas Tort Claims Act. Because if you look at their laundry list of negligence claims here, they are primarily dealing with failure to do something with regards to premises conditions. And this gets us into this discretionary acts, which I will discuss some more here in a moment. They also have a few allegations in there saying that the city should have provided flashlights or portable lights to patrons so that they'd be able to see their way out. This is an exception under the Tort Claims Act because it's a use, or in this case, a non-use of personal property. They also allege two allegations dealing with negligence maintenance. And in following up here, Judge, the reason why this case is really a light case and not a maintenance of the pathways is because of the evidence that's in the briefing and in this case. Ms. Sullivan, in her testimony, has gone up and down this pathway three times in the 2 days when this happened. The day before, she goes to the rehearsal. She goes into the Japanese Gardens, goes to the pavilion, goes up the stairs, comes back down the stairs, leaves the pavilion, comes back on the day of the wedding, goes in, goes up the stairs. And as she leaves on the third time, I ask her specifically, was there any substance on the floor that you stepped on? No. Was there any loose rocks? No. Was there anything unusual, different, anything at all with regards to this stairway? No. The only thing different from the other three times she went up and down those stairs is it was dark. This is a light case, not whether or not the trees have been trimmed and the bushes have been trimmed. This is a question of how much lighting is being provided at nighttime for events such as this there in the Japanese Gardens.
There's no evidence to that in the
in the evidence at the plea to the jurisdiction hearing.
There, but you didn't present any evidence either on this issue, did you?
No, not on that specific issue, no.
Well, on any issue, because it was your position that their pleading did not plead anything other than a policy formulation allegations, and therefore they lose because those are protected.
No, Your Honor, that's their allegation in their brief. That's not the the actual summary, the plea to the jurisdictional evidence. There was plea to the jurisdictional evidence with regards to testimony from the Ertie Alsup, who is in the head of the Fort Worth Botanical Society, which operates under contract. There's testimony from Henry Painter with regards to the operation and maintenance of the Fort Worth Botanical Garden. Henry Painter is the superintendent of horticulture for the city of Fort Worth and the director of the Fort Worth Botanical Gardens. There is a substantial amount of evidence with regards to the operation and maintenance of, you know, the botanical gardens, both during the day and at night. And it has to go really to this discretionary activity. Council sits there and says that, wait a minute, it's a policy. Once you make the policy decision that we're going to have a park, then anything after that is operational, implementation, and it all becomes subject.
That really wasn't their argument. Their argument was it's a policy decision that we're going to put lights and handrails, just like it was a policy decision in the Stephen F. Austin case that we're going to put an irrigation system, and then it's an implementation decision as to where those lights and handrails would be located, just like it was an implementation decision in the Stephen F. Austin case. That was really their argument, wasn't it?
I would disagree with, you know, the extent of their argument with you, Your Honor, because their argument is that once you have to make the policy decision, everything else becomes implementation. Their argument is taking that Stephen F. Austin case and says that, look, the Supreme Court says that anything after you make the decision that you're going to put a sprinkler system in then becomes implementation. I don't read Stephen F. Austin Flynn case by saying, you know, if you look at it, the Supreme Court says that the decision to put in the sprinkler system, where to put the sprinkler heads, can be, you know, discretionary decisions. Now, when to turn on that sprinkler system is a maintenance decision. When to turn it on, when to turn it off, those are the operational decisions for which liability does rest. Our argument is that there is, in this case, the contract between the Fort Worth Botanical Society and the City of Fort Worth makes it very clear about what has to go through to Henry Painter and the City Council to make a decision on any changes that go on within this Fort Worth Botanical Society, you know, operation of the Japanese Gardens. The lighting system, and from the evidence, was that the city hired a landscape architect to design the lighting for the pathways, and that this lighting was put in, that the lighting is kept on 24 hours a day so that any workers out there, if they see any light bulbs out, then can report the light bulbs as being out, and that any light bulbs that get changed out have to be, you know, hired by an outside electrician who comes in and then has to sign off on the changing out of the light bulbs. Removal of trees even have to go back to Henry Painter or to the City Council as a policy decision. You know, it's the level of who makes these decisions. Is it a person that, you know, goes out there and turns on the sprinkler system, as in the Stephen F. Austin case, or opens up the floodgate in the Bennett case, or, you know, who goes out there and clips the limbs in the Japanese Gardens, as opposed to who is making the decision on, do we put in a 50-watt bulb or a 100-watt bulb? These then become, in this case, a policy decision. Now, one of the other issues on this...
Is it a policy decision to use
Yes, Your Honor. There's the, well, I say whether it's, that's a policy decision, I can't say. I don't know.
It would be a policy decision would be whether or not to use the gardens in a way that, they could, that it could be rented and that could extend into the night, correct?
Yes.
All right. And if that's the policy decision, then the implementation of that policy decision would be how much, how, what kind of lighting do we furnish on the steps?
And it would be a policy decision for that, for which a landscape architect was brought in, that these decisions were made, and that they...
And then if it's not adequate in terms of after that policy decision is made, if we're going to operate after night, we're going to have some lighting, then when does it reach the degree of when to turn the water on the sprinklers and the blend gas?
When there is a decision to change the lighting system, because then it's then there's another decision, or if they're, the lighting that you have out there is you're using a 100-watt bulb in the original design, and the bulb burns out, and somebody then comes along and decides to put in a 50-watt bulb instead of a 100-watt bulb so that your lighting is only half, has half the lumens that it had before. That's, that would be the point where there is now a maintenance decision or an operational decision that is different than the original policy decision to have 100-watt bulbs in this particular string and light of the pathway.
Thank you.
Okay.
You're saying if the policy decision is to whether you're going to replace a burned-out light bulb?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. I'm saying that that is the maintenance decisions that get made because the lights are on 24 hours a day. Workers out there, if they see these bulbs are out, then they, you know, there is a process and a procedure that can get followed. But there is no evidence, no testimony, no suggestion that any of the bulbs were burnt out. Their suggestion was is that they were just small, low-wattage bulbs that did provided an inadequate lighting. There were allegations that there are, you know, trees and the brush, and that blocks the adequacy of the lighting. Yes.
Now, all we have to look at is the allegations and their pleading to see if they have alleged something that's not a policy decision, but instead an implementation decision?
You look to their pleadings first, and if there's then evidence that shows that, you know, their allegation is completely without merit, you know, as a matter of law, as in a summary judgment weighing of the evidence, then you look to the evidence. But if they're, you know, without any plea to the jurisdictional evidence that completely, you know, knocks out that allegation of maintenance, then you would look strictly to the pleading. Yes, Your Honor. I mean, it would be in the testimony of Henry Painter and Ertie Alsop in their depositions, in which they went out there on the day following the incident. They could not find any problems with the lighting. And if I may quickly address the recreational use statute, because to me this is also a very important point. Because if there is governmental immunity waiver, then we have a question of the recreational use statute and whether or not a wedding is a recreational use. It's never been addressed by this court or any other court in Texas. The statute says that a recreational use or recreational activity is any other activity associated enjoying with the enjoying of nature or the outdoors. The Sullivans make a very somber presentation of what is a marriage. However, weddings take place indoors in a very solemn affair, or they can take place outdoors in a garden setting such as this. You know, the choices that the Sullivans said that they had were, you know, at the botanical gardens or at other locations. in the Dallas-Fort Worth area where people do these outdoors because they want to shout out to the world their marriage, and it's to appreciate the outdoors and the nature. Also, specifically with the recreational use statute, we raised another point which has never been addressed before, and that is that the C3 provision, and that is whether or not the Ms. Sullivan, by her own acts, if it causes her injury, then there is no liability on the property owner. And it doesn't say by her negligence, but it says by her acts. Counsel for the appellants say that we should ignore this statute or this portion of the statute completely because it doesn't make any sense. Well, it also disregards statutory interpretation that every provision of the statute must be interpreted and given effect if it can. I say that I'm out of time. Your Honor, I ask the court to sustain the plea to the jurisdiction. Thank you.
I thought you were leaving me a gift there, Paul. In the few moments I have left, let me just remind the court that it's a plea of the jurisdiction, but the standard is summary judgment. We pled, we believe, a product premises liability defect case. I mean, lighting has always been an issue in premises liability. You can find those staircases all over the internet, all over Texas cases. We pled they were negligent in maintenance. It's interesting, they never addressed that issue in their plea of the jurisdiction. They didn't address it in their argument to the trial court. The first time they raised the fact they think negligent maintenance doesn't exist was in response to our brief and their brief. Also, they offer a strange argument that because Mr. Painter was involved in a decision, it becomes policy. He's an employee of the city. And whether he does something does not automatically make it the city council. And they've kind of blended those and said, if he does it, the city council does it. I don't see that in the evidence, nor I see it in the case. When we tried this, had the oral argument, they wanted to say design. It was architectural design. So we said, look, that's fine. Bring some evidence out. You haven't done so yet. You haven't shown that this is a discretionary issue about what wattage to put out there. We would say wattage is pretty much equal to flow of water. They talked in the Flynn case about the placement of the sprinkler heads. The placement of the lights should be implementation. The council who argued, the city's council at the trial court said, we don't have to bring any evidence. You've pled design. We have no need to bring any evidence. Your Honor, they've admitted they brought no evidence. Now they want to come back and say we have all this evidence. Your Honor, they did not submit it. They have not submitted it. They didn't at the trial court. They didn't here. We've submitted evidence that there was an issue whether the lights were sufficient. They said they were normally sufficient. That night we know it was very dark, and she fell because of the darkness. We also know that there were some issues with vegetation. They planted trees in places, that's implementation, and they blocked light. In fact, they removed it from trees after this case was over with, after Mr. Sullivan fell. And so there are many issues under the under this issue about whether their activities of the cities were negligent implementation or policy formation. I believe it's very similar to the Flynn case and the cases decided by this court, and their actions, or at least under the current pleadings and the facts that have come in, are actionable negligence. I would like to just briefly go back to the recreational use statute. I'm not sure how much the court's interested in that. You have no questions on that point. But it's interesting that the city didn't mention their primary argument. That they said it's the park. I mean, that's their brief. They said they focused on the big issue, that it's a park. But they focused now on the issue that it's enjoying the outdoors. And they asked all the witnesses, both my clients, did you have a good time? As if you're outdoors and you're enjoying yourself, make something recreation. The statute says an activity associated with the outdoors. It's a law. It's at the end, or actually now the fourth in the end because of some additions from the legislature. But at the end of a long list of activities. And the Supreme Court says you look at the nature of the activity. If you were to take the city's argument and kind of run it to the end, basically anytime you're outdoors having a good time, you would be recreation. About 4 years ago, I went down to Kerrville with my wife. Her best friend's mom died. And we went over to Floresville down in South San Antonio for the graveside service, and there's a big oak tree. by 8 feet up, it split, and there was a cactus growing up in the oak tree. And several of us sat there and just admired that cactus. I think under the city's argument, we have now had recreation. We're outside in a park setting. We enjoyed it. There's no end. And in fact, if you take their argument, you come full circle back to the location and not the activity. And our Texas Supreme Court said, you look at the activity. It's the activity that matters. Look at definitions. There's a case out of Waco, Samuelson versus University versus Anderson. They looked at the definition of recreation in Webster's. There's all sorts of definitions on the internet, dictionaries. You know, recreation involves pastime, play, something you do after work. There's no way you get a marriage ceremony to be recreation. Your Honor, if you look at the case, I think you'll see that we've alleged acts of negligence that are actionable by Texas law. We've alleged that our client went on this property expecting to be able to leave, and she found out it was dark. Why it was dark is something that we've in the process of discovery, but we're not through with it, other than the fact that the lights were small lights, Christmas lights. They were put in the wrong spot. Foliage had covered it up. That's premises liability in Texas. Those are acts, law says, or implementation, and they can be sued upon. Recreation usual statute doesn't apply, so all the other arguments go out the window. We would ask this court, if you would, to reverse that plea of the jurisdiction and send this case back for trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. White. Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your arguments today. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business. We have one more case on our 3 o'clock docket.